All right. So welcome to 7 Steps to Awakening. And as you guys know, I like to play a song at the very beginning just kind of as an opportunity to get quiet. This morning I played a song during the weekly gathering called I Shall Not Want by Audrey Assad. I thought I'd play another Audrey Assad song that I enjoy. This one is called Ought to Be. So here we go.
I love you more than a slow falling summer rain, more than a silence that only the snow leaves behind. I love you more, and I love you better than the gray of the autumn air, better than spring in its blooming against the sky. I love you more. It may not be red as a rose is yet, it may not be strong as the old oak trees, but love that it deeply becomes what it ought to be. Your love is steady and sure as the mountains high, moving my heart like a river that gently bends. Your love is sure. Your love is wide open spaces where I can run, and yet we're tangled up roots in the warm broken earth. Our love is sure, and it may not be clear as the morning yet, it may not be white as the restless sea, but love given freely becomes what it ought to be. Clear as the morning, yet it may not be white as a restless sea, and it may not be red as the roses get, it may not be strong as the old oak trees, but love that it deeply becomes what it ought to, and hearts given freely become what they ought to, and love that it deeply becomes what it ought to be. What it ought to be.
Beautiful song. I don't know if you know how closely you were listening to the song, but you know, the song is a song to God, and she talks about how much she loves God, and then she says, but I know it's not as red as a rose yet. You know, I know it's not as strong as an oak tree yet. And then she says, but love planted deeply becomes what it ought to be. Another line is, love given freely becomes what it ought to be, or hearts given freely becomes what it ought to be. So, you know, what this song says to me again is, when I am in spiritual practice, you know, whether it's contemplation, meditation, just, you know, watching my mind as I go about doing other things, when I am in spiritual practice, that is time given freely. You know, I am not paid by anyone to contemplate, to meditate, to watch my thoughts and discern and choose carefully. This is love given freely. And what I love is that she says, love given freely becomes what it ought to be. I think that means that we can all have great confidence that we are moving in the direction that we have chosen, even though, of course, our judgmental mind from time to time will tell us, you know, how we're not doing this practice well enough. We're not spending enough time in practice. We're not good enough. I think that this song by Audrey Hassad is much more correct. So I love the song. Again, it was called Ought to Be by Audrey Hassad. All right. Well, we are here for the 7 steps to awakening. And tonight we are going to start with 673. So I am posting a quote, a link to 673 in my journal in the room. For those of you who have been here before, you know how I do this. First, I read from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. I read the quote. Maybe share about the quote. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It just depends on what happens. But then at some point, I go to the journal and I read what I wrote when I contemplated this quote deeply in 2012. And then sometimes share again. So I'm going to begin by reading the quote from The 7 Steps to Awakening. This is a quote by Yoga Vasistha. After having abandoned the very root of the ego sense, I rest in the self, which is the nature of peace. After having abandoned the very root of the ego sense, I rest in the self, which is of the nature of peace. And I'm going to go directly to the journal. So this is what is written in the journal at number 673. The ego is activity, thought activity, body activity, world activity, emotional activity. Abandon activity as meaningful. Let all activity be valueless. Without emphasis on activity, awareness rests within itself. In this way, true self is realized. Those of you who take true discernment or have taken true discernment in the MPP program might recognize this. You actually studied this particular journal entry in True Discernment. I remember when I first posted it, someone made some kind of a comment. I posted it in Facebook, and someone made some kind of a comment where I could tell that they misunderstood this journal entry, maybe read it too quickly. Sometimes we can read things too quickly, see what we think we see, rather than seeing what is here. And the person thought that what the quote was saying is like there's something wrong with activity. You know, if you work for a living, or if you are involved in hobbies, or if you spend time with your family, that is bad. If your mind thinks, that is bad. If you experience emotions, that is bad. And the person became somewhat defensive, of course, saying there's nothing wrong with activity. And actually, that isn't what this quote says. The quote doesn't say that you are bad or that activity is bad. The quote is saying something completely different, or not the quote, the journal entry. Let's look at this journal entry very carefully. First of all, it says the ego is activity. I don't know if you've paid any attention to the ego at all. But if you have paid any attention to the ego at all, you notice that it is movement. It's a constant movement. And in fact, one thing that I've noticed in meditation is that as I practice meditation, when the thoughts arise, and I practice turning my attention away from the thoughts back to awareness, the words of the thoughts themselves begin to kind of fade. But what I notice is like this active energy that I know really was the root of the thoughts. I can just feel that active energy. That active energy, it does two things. One, it shows us that thought is movement, or ego is movement. But two, it also shows us that thought is form. You know, many of us think of thought as formless, like compared to you know, this desk. This desk is, we think, hard form, and thoughts are formless. But actually, when you get to where you just notice the energy of the thought, you just feel the energy of the thought, you feel that they're also a very concrete form, right? They're also form. And that form comes about through movement. The ego is always, always moving. It's a constant movement. So this very first line of the journal entry is saying the ego is activity. It is not saying activity is bad. It is just saying that the ego is movement. The ego is activity. And then it goes on to show some types of activity. One, which I just spoke about, is thought activity. That movement of thought, that is the ego. Body activity. Now, we all know that the body can be moved by something other than the ego, right? In fact, I spoke this morning about a mysterious force that was moving the body. But we also know the body can be moved by the ego, but that's not even what this quote is talking about. The quote isn't really talking about whether the body is moved by the ego or whether the body is moved by something other than the ego. We don't have to get into an intellectual conversation or a debate about what moves the body. Because this quote goes on to say, abandon activity as meaningful, which really means that what this journal entry is saying is, if I give meaning to what the body is doing, for example, I might give meaning by saying, I'm very responsible. I'm a very good president minister because I did this, 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 and this. Right? That would be giving meaning to the activity. That's ego. I could also say, oh, I'm not a good president minister. I'm very unworthy. I'm very irresponsible because I did not do this, this, and this. That is also giving meaning to activity. That's the ego. So if you really look at this particular journal entry carefully, it's not saying that the fact that the body moves, the fact that the body reaches out and grabs a glass of water and drinks it, it's not saying that is ego. It's really saying giving meaning, whether it's positive meaning or negative meaning, giving some kind of meaning, some kind of definition to what the body does. That is ego. So we have the ego is activity, thought activity, body activity, world activity. Now again, just like with the body, in fact, I don't really see any difference between the body and the world. Just like the body can be moved by ego, the world, as we know, can be moved by ego, but also just like the body can be moved by spirit, the world can be moved by spirit. Again, this isn't getting into some kind of an intellectual debate about what moves the world. This is saying, if I give meaning to something that is happening in the world, that is ego. So if I give meaning to, I think, Lynn's in Quincy right now, if I give some meaning to Lynn being in Quincy and I say, oh, Lynn is a really good sanctuary director. She is so responsible. Even while she's in Quincy, she's still showing up in her and doing her job. That value judgment is ego. If I say, oh, Lynn is a bad sanctuary manager, you know, instead of being here in Pueblo, you know, where she could be, where she has all the right equipment, she's there, the phone doesn't always work, the internet isn't always working, that is ego. It's saying giving meaning to what is out there in the world. That is ego. And, you know, this isn't really very different than the first few course lessons. In fact, let me open up the workbook and we'll just review some of these course lessons and listen how this is really saying the exact same thing. Lesson 1. Nothing I see in this room means anything. I have given everything I see in this room all the meaning that it has for me. I do not understand anything I see in this room. These thoughts do not mean anything. They are like the things I see in this room. And it goes on. So what is it that gives the meaning, right? It is the ego that gives the meaning. And that's what this journal entry is saying. It's helping us to notice ego. You know, some people think of ego as only the negative meaning. So, for example, I'm irresponsible as president minister. Lynn is irresponsible as sanctuary director. That would be ego, some people would say. But if I say I am very good as president minister because I am very responsible, some people might still say that was ego. Yeah, because I'm talking about myself. But if I say Lynn is very good as sanctuary director because she is so responsible, most people wouldn't even think of that as ego. You know, that just sounds nice. That sounds complimentary to another human being. But actually, the reason that is ego is because if I'm giving that kind of meaning to Lynn right now, you know, I'm looking at Lynn and I'm saying, look how responsible she is. She's in Quincy and she's still showing up in the room. What's going to happen when she doesn't show up in the room? Right? Then the opposite is going to happen. It's judgment. And whenever you have judgment, right, even if you're judging something as good, when things change, and things always change, then you're going to be judging the opposite appearance as bad, right? So all of that judgment is ego. That is what this is saying. So the ego is activity, thought activity, body activity, world activity, emotional activity. Again, the fact that I feel an emotion is not to be judged. Whether I feel fear, whether I feel emotional love, whether I feel guilt, unworthiness, that's not to be judged. This is not saying emotions are bad. However, if I give meaning to those emotions, for instance, one mistake I know that many of us on the spiritual path have made before is, you know, when we're feeling peaceful and joyous, we judge that as good. We think we're doing well on the spiritual path. And then when something comes up, we're feeling fearful, we're feeling guilt, we're feeling doubtful, we're feeling confused. We think, oh no, I've done something wrong. I thought I was doing good on the spiritual path, but I have slipped backwards, right? That is us giving meaning to the spiritual activity. I mean, to the emotional activity. And that which is giving meaning to the emotional activity, calling one progress and the other one backsliding, that is the ego. So it isn't saying any of these things are bad. It isn't even saying the ego is bad, right? It's just saying that this type of activity, this giving meaning, this is ego. And it's helping us to see that. And let me read this journal entry again. The ego is activity, thought activity, body activity, world activity, emotional activity. Now listen to the next part of this. Abandon activity as meaningful. It doesn't say abandon activity, period. I don't know about you, but I can't abandon activity. I mean, breathing is activity, right? Eating, going to the bathroom, getting ready for bed, taking a shower, even these most basic human activities are activities. So this is not saying abandon activity. It is saying abandon activity as meaningful. Am I good on the days that I get up and take a shower right away? If so, then I'm going to be bad on the days when I don't get around to taking a shower and getting dressed until 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Or, here's the option. Some people say, what's the option? You know, what's the other option between good and bad? Some people don't see the other option. The other option is, it is what it is, right? Today, I happen to take a shower early at 8 o'clock. It is what it is. On this day, I happen to not get dressed and take a shower until 3 p.m. It is what it is. on this day, Lynn happens to be out of town and in the room. It is what it is. On this day, Lynn is out of town or in town. Who cares? And not in the room. It is what it is. As president minister, I got these tasks done today. They are what they are. As president minister, not much got done today. It is what it is. You see, it is what it is not a good or a bad judgment. It's what people call acceptance. Acceptance. It is what it is. And sometimes people say, but if you go around accepting things all of the time, then nothing ever gets changed. And actually, that's not true. That's not true at all. For example, around 3 p.m. today, I accepted that I was hungry. I was working today. I was working this afternoon. We weren't doing much, so I was working on MPP facilitator guides. And then around 3 p.m., I started noticing I was getting hungry. I accepted that I was hungry. I did not resist it. I did not deny it. I did not judge myself for being hungry when I wasn't done with the MPP facilitator guide work that I was doing. I accepted that I was hungry. And then I said to Ron, "Ron, how would you like to go and get something to eat?" You know, so I accepted that I was hungry. And then I, you know, went with Ron to a restaurant. I had a nice salmon sandwich. And now I am not hungry. So you can accept things. It is what it is. I am hungry now. And you can change it. You know, you can go and eat. So acceptance does not get in the way of changing things if change is also very appropriate, right? Now, sometimes we know within ourselves that we need to accept something and allow it to be as it is, right? We know that. We know that the only thing in us that would try and change it is our ego judging activity. So it can go either way. But acceptance doesn't mean you can never change situations. It just means you accept it. It is what it is. It is raining today. I will put up the umbrella, right? It is hot today. I will drink a big glass of ice water, right? There are appropriate actions that still occur when we accept things. But what this particular journal entry is saying is when we, instead of acceptance, we go into judgment and we give thoughts, the body, the world, our emotions, meaning, whether that be good meaning or bad meaning, that is ego. In fact, in A Course in Miracles, it says something about the ego analyzes the spirit accepts. You see, the ego analyzes. Is the fact that I'm eating 5 cookies in a row, is that good or is that bad? Well, that's making me fat, and making me fat is bad. So eating these cookies are bad, right? It analyzes based on God knows what. And it comes to judgmental decisions. But the spirit accepts. It is what it is. This is my 5th cookie. This is just what I'm doing now. It is what it is, right? Again, back to the journal entry. The ego is activity. Thought activity, body activity, world activity, emotional activity. Abandon activity as meaningful. Let all activity be valueless. And this, some people misunderstand words like that too. And of course, I'm fortunate because this is my journal and I know exactly what I mean when I'm talking to myself. What this means by valueless is, again, with values, you have a hierarchy of values. You know, a clean house is better than an unclean house. Might be a hierarchy of values. Low price gas is better than expensive gas. You know, I don't know what else, but you have a hierarchy of values. When this is saying, let all activity be valueless, it means without hierarchy, right? Make everything the same. How many times have we heard Dove quote A Course in Miracles by saying that? Make everything the same. That's what this is saying too. And in fact, Michael Langford, using the loving all method, would ask us to love everything. Make everything the same by loving it. And I don't know about you all, but for me, love and joy tend to be the same thing. I can't really separate the two. So sometimes people read words like valueless, let all activity be valueless, and they think boring, humdrum, and, you know, why would I want to do that? That's not what this means. This means let go of the hierarchy. Go ahead, love everything equally, right? Love the day when you only eat fresh fruits and vegetables as much as the day when you eat cookies all day long, right? Love everything. The loving all method. Make it valueless. Don't have a hierarchy of good and bad. That value hierarchy comes from the ego. Yeah, Dove is now putting in his famous quote from A Course in Miracles, make this year different by making it all the same. The ego is activity. Now here, activity really means movement, change, right? The ego is activity, thought activity, body activity, world activity, emotional activity. Abandon activity as meaningful. Let all activity be valueless. Without emphasis on activity, awareness rests within itself. I think this is probably why Michael Langford recommends the loving all method, right? If you are loving everything, really loving everything, even what you would, your mind would determine your mistakes, your failures, right? If you are loving everything, somehow you are resting as yourself. You're resting in acceptance. You're resting in watching. You're resting in awareness. You are not centered in the judgmental ego. You're resting as yourself. You're resting as your true self. So without emphasis on activity, awareness rests within itself. In this way, true self is realized. And some of you have probably also heard me talk about Michael Singer in his book, The Untethered Soul, which is one of my very favorite books. Chapter 15, I believe it is about unconditional happiness as a spiritual path. And to me, chapter 15 of Michael Singer's book is the same as Michael Langford's recommendation of the loving all method. You know, one is using the word love and one is using happiness, but it's really the same. Like I said, I can't separate love and joy. I can't. To me, they're the same. So I made a commitment, a couple of years ago now. I don't remember what year it was. I remember it was just before Christmas. I think it was probably a couple of years ago. I made a commitment to the unconditional happiness. I made a commitment to the unconditional happiness. And what's really interesting about making a commitment to the unconditional happiness or to the loving all method is what you're making a commitment to do is to be happy or to love no matter what. And what happened for me very quickly, I don't know if it was a day later or 2 days later or 3 days later, but I remember it was very quickly. What happened for me very quickly after committing to the unconditional happiness method is there was a blow up in the house. Now for some people, they live in houses where there's blow ups all the time, where, you know, the family is always fighting. That's not true here. In this house, we don't fight, and we haven't in years. We love each other easily. We get along easily. We enjoy each other easily, and that's our natural living environment. But what happened within just a few days of me committing to the unconditional happiness method was there was a blow up. And I won't tell the story of the blow up because someone else would be embarrassed, and so I won't do that. But someone became unhappy with a decision of mine. And She got so angry, she stormed out of the house and slammed the door. And then the other person that I lived with got upset that I got this other person upset. She saw it as my fault that this other person was upset. And remember, upset isn't something we're used to in my house. So the fact that one person got upset and ran out of the house and slammed the door made the other person upset, right? Upset at me. And then she ran in her room and slammed the door. Well, I'm laughing now, but I was not laughing that day. In fact, what I immediately felt that day was just this frustration. I felt this huge frustration with just the situation, I guess. Just the situation in general. And as soon as I felt the frustration, I was in the kitchen at the time, so I kind of just sat down in the kitchen floor and leaned up against the cabinets. And I remembered that I had just made a commitment to be unconditionally happy. And I literally asked, how can I be happy with this? Right, a house that's always peaceful, everyone's always in joy, and now everyone's angry and slamming doors. How can I be happy with this? And the realization that came was to be happy with feeling frustrated right now. It didn't mean that I shouldn't feel frustrated. It meant be happy with every experience. Right? And you see, what we do, again, we create this value system. We say feeling peace, feeling joy, feeling love is good. Feeling frustration, feeling anger, feeling jealousy, feeling guilt is bad. And the way that we let go of the value is that we accept, love, be happy with whatever is. Not only externally or what appears externally, but also internally or what appears internally. So my job then was to be happy with the frustration. And, you know, the next question would be, well, how do you do that? Because we aren't taught how to be happy with emotions that were cold or negative emotions. We aren't taught how to be happy with them. So the next question is, but how do I do that? And the answer that came for me was curiosity. Just look at frustration curiously, right? What does frustration feel like? And I found myself sitting on the floor of the kitchen, looking at this frustration with curiosity. And you know what began to happen? You might even feel it in yourself now. As I began to look at the frustration with curiosity, I literally began to smile at the frustration. I began to enjoy the exploration of the frustration. And of course, in that way, the frustration then, you know, disappeared, right? I mean, you can't have frustration and enjoyment at the same time. So as I looked at it with curiosity, yeah, curiosity is fun. As I looked at it with curiosity, I moved into enjoyment, which meant that the frustration went away. And just to let you know, the end of the story on this particular day is the one who had left came back. You know, I don't know what happened for her in that period of time, but she apologized, which I don't know that she needed to apologize, but that's what she felt to do. That was closure for her. So that was okay. The other one came out of the bedroom and was happy that things were beginning to turn around. And we ended up going out to lunch, and things resolved themselves pretty quickly. But the important lesson that came out of that, which is, I think, a very important lesson. The important lesson was, if you're practicing the loving all method, or if you're practicing acceptance or allowance, you know, maybe like Adyashanti teaches, or if you're, Adyashanti says, allow everything to be as it is in a very deep way. That's really the same method. Just different words. Allow everything to be as it is in a very deep way. Or if you're practicing the consistent happiness method that Michael Singer recommends, this means with everything, which means we have to let go of the values. We can't say these things are good. I can accept them, love them, be happy with them. But oh, when this happens, it's a different story. Even when this happens, even when I'm feeling this emotion, fear, frustration, anger, hatred, right? I need to be happy with this as well. That is making all activity valueless, right? That is making everything the same. Make this year different by making it all the same. So again, number 673 in the journal says, the ego is activity, thought activity, body activity, world activity, emotional activity. Abandon activity as meaningful. Let all activity be valueless. Without emphasis on activity, awareness rests within itself. In this way, true self is realized. And I'm going to go back now and look at the original Yoga Vasistha quote that was being contemplated when I wrote this down. This is the original quote. After having abandoned the very root of the ego sense, I rest in the self, which is of the nature of peace. So having abandoned judgment, having abandoned differences, right? Having abandoned that thinking that really is judgment and values and differences, right? Having abandoned that, being with whatever is in joy, in happiness, in love, in peace, and acceptance, I rest in the self. And with that said, we will go on to 674. First, I will read the Yoga Vasistha quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. You know, there's one person that I always put to see. Oh, Tricky Vicky. Was Tricky Vicky Vicky Poppy? I didn't know who Tricky Vicky was. Is that Vicky Poppy? If so, is she still here? Hi, Vicky! I didn't know who Tricky Vicky was. I did think of Tricky Dicky, of course. Oh, no, this is a different Vicky. Okay, well, hi, Vicky, anyway. Maybe someday we'll meet, Vicky. All right. So, 674. The ego sense is the source of endless sorrow, suffering, and evil action. The ego sense is the source of endless sorrow, suffering, and evil action. So, let's go ahead and look at the journal 674. I, and that's in quotes, of course, but it means that I thought that what some people may think of as that belief in a separate person as me, right? I is the root of all evil. Some people don't like the word evil. I don't have a problem with it anymore because I think it is foolish to deny that some appearances are evil, evil appearances. And believe it or not, maybe that's because I can say the word evil without judgment. It may sound crazy. How can you say the word evil without judgment? But it can be done. But there are certain appearances that are evil. They're not anything but that. And so if there are evil appearances, and if all appearances come from the thinking that we are believing, the thinking that we are putting our attention on, then there must be some thinking that I am doing that is causing or contributing to the evil appearances. And if your heart is anything like mine, you have a lot of interest in discovering any thinking or believing that you are doing that is contributing to the evil appearances in the world. And you're very excited to have a light shine on it. Very excited to have it pointed out to you so that you can, in the language of A Course in Miracles, choose again. Right? So that you can make a change and you are no longer focusing your attention on that which causes evil appearances. Again, all of this needs to be done without judgment, without guilt, right? It's done with a sense of realization rather than a sense of judgment. But let's go back to 674 journal entry. I is the root of all evil. Okay, now here's what that includes. That includes my opinions, my thoughts on how things should be, what is right and what is wrong, my ideas about what I want, my ideas about how right I am and how much I know. All branches pushing forth from the root of I are the cause of suffering. Take down the I. Be nothing. Here is peace. Now, I don't know where you all went to college, or actually even if you went to college, but I did go to college. I didn't go to the best colleges in the world, as judgment would lay them out. I went to Florida Junior College, a community college in Jacksonville, Florida, for a couple years. And then I joined the Air Force, and I went to the University of Maryland, what they called the Asian Division, which was a few teachers teaching a few subjects in Okinawa, Japan. And that's how I got my degree, is by taking these classes in Okinawa, Japan, and it's a University of Maryland degree, but I've never stepped foot on campus. So, you know, I didn't have what in the world they would call the best of university educations, not like the one my daughter is getting now. She's getting a very good education now. However, one of the things that was emphasized, even in my education, was the importance of opinions, right? The importance of looking at an issue. Oh, you worked at Jacksonville University. How cool is that, Dolores? Or Gloria? Or Dolores? How did I get Gloria and Dolores mixed up? This is Dolores' willingness. When Dolores changed her name, I got confused for a little while. Somehow the name Willingness reminded me of Gloria's name, which has light in it. And then I got unconfused, but just now I was confused again. But anyway, as I was saying, I was taught that it's important to have well thought out opinions, to stand by your opinions, right? To be able to defend your opinions. I was taught in college this is important. This is what makes you a worthy person, an intelligent person, right? But look at what opinions do. If you don't have the ability to look at your own opinions right now because you're too attached to them, look at the opinions of others. Go ahead and start there, realizing that you're only doing that to learn, not to judge. It's just sometimes a little easier to look in the mirror, and the mirror is the world. So, yeah, like law school, Barb, same thing. So look at the opinions of others. What do they create? Conflict, right? Opinions create conflict. You know, look at the opinions that we have on abortion, right? The choice versus the, what do they call it, the pro-life movement. Look at the opinions on guns, you know, like the NRA position versus those who think that, you know, guns should be outlawed, illegal, right? I mean, and we could just go on and on and on with opinions. Democratic opinions versus Republican opinions. Opinions cause conflict. And that's not just other people's opinions. That's my opinions. And in fact, that's what's most important. I may learn that by looking at other people's opinions and seeing the conflict out there, or noticing the conflict I feel within myself when someone expresses and defends an opinion that is different from mine. If I want to remove myself from the cause of suffering, then I also need to let go of my opinions, because opinions are the cause of conflict. It also includes my thoughts on how things should be, what is right and what is wrong, right? And we just saw in the previous discussion that that type of value judgment is ego. And again, I know a lot of people who have trouble letting go of this. I've had people many times ask me, this is a common question people like to ask me when I'm teaching, probably because they know I'm a mother, and they say, so do you mean you're not going to teach your daughter the difference between right and wrong? Well, actually, I really don't think I did. I don't think I taught my daughter the difference between right and wrong. First of all, every single one of us are born with a guidance system. You know, some people call it conscience. Some people call it Holy Spirit. I like to call it inner wisdom. But we're all born with a guidance system that does whisper in our ear when we are about to do something that is not in the best interests of ourselves or anyone else, right? It lets us know. And I trusted that my daughter had this guidance system. And when she was faced with something, I would help her explore within and feel the best thing to do now, right? So I didn't need to teach her the difference between right and wrong. I needed to teach her to feel within. The other thing that I taught my daughter as her mother is that I would always love her no matter which decision she made in any situation. She can't make a decision or take an action that is going to cause me to reject her. That's an impossibility, right? That I always love her. And that I always trust her, right? So there are choices other than right and wrong. And there is a guidance system that can guide you through what to do and what not to do. And yet that guidance system doesn't have the judgment of right and wrong. It has more the feeling of yes and no, right? Yes and no. But what happens if you choose the no? You are still loved. You are still trusted. Nothing at all has changed. However, you might have chose a bit of suffering for yourself that could have been avoided if you'd listened to the internal yes instead of what the internal was recommending you don't do or don't say, right? But there's no true right or wrong. Wrong meaning you can now be determined bad, unlovable, you can be rejected, you can be cast out. That does not exist. And anyone who does believe it exists is only listening to the ego. They're listening to a false thought system. They're getting wrong messages. They don't know they're wrong messages, and they're listening to those messages as if they're true. But here in this room, we speak the truth, or at least to the best of our ability, we speak the truth. And there is nothing wrong that you can do. At the same time, again, you can kind of, for lack of better words, we'll call them mistakes. A Course in Miracles talks about the difference between sin and a mistake, right? You can make a mistake, and as a result of making that mistake, there may be suffering that was unnecessary, but it's not a sin. You aren't judged for it. You are still perfectly loved and perfectly trusted, right? There is nothing you can do that will change that. So, the root of all evil includes the judgment of right and wrong. Why? Well, just think for a moment of anyone, whether it's yourself or someone else, think for a moment when you judge them as wrong. Think about the energy that you felt. Right? That energy, I'm going to call, is a darker energy. Right? That energy of, you know, it may have been hatred. It, you know, may have felt just like a pure judgmental feeling. It may have been a wanting to get away from somebody, but it's a darker energy. And that darker energy is what adds to the creation of temporary evil appearances. I mean, if let's look at ISIS for a moment. Right now, ISIS, you know, has the award of the most evil appearance, at least in the news on the planet. I think there's plenty of others, they're just not in the news as much. But the one that's in the news. And what does ISIS think? You know, put your mind in their minds for a moment. ISIS believes I'm right. The infidels are wrong. They must die, right? It's just a manifestation of that same dark energy that we all feel, possibly in some cases to a lighter degree and some cases to a heavier degree. But let's imagine there's 7.5 billion of us feeling this dark energy, all judging someone else as wrong and feeling this dark energy just to a light degree. But when you take a light degree of 7.5 billion people and put it together, you have a pretty heavy darkness. So you see, when we judge things as right or wrong, we are helping to create the energy that creates the dark appearances, possibly the very appearance that I'm judging. Right? I'm judging myself as right and ISIS as wrong. And yet, my judgment is adding to the appearance of ISIS. Okay, let me look at this journal entry again, starting at the top. I is the root of all evil. That includes my opinions, which we could say are the root of all conflict. My thoughts on how things should be, what is right and what is wrong. My ideas about what I want, right? Again, if we use ISIS as an example, aren't they going after what they want? And maybe what I want is a lot less harmful, at least in my opinion, right? Let me think of something that I could want. Maybe what I want is, I'm trying to think really hard, I don't know. Somebody give me an example. But something that I could want. Because my mind is blank. Guess we're not having much luck here thinking of anything that we want. I want Jasmine to be happy and successful. Yeah, I can use that as an example. The funny thing is, let me use that as an example in the way that I see other people doing it. So I want Jasmine to be happy and successful. Now for me, that alone is okay. The problem comes in when I judge that she's doing something that won't lead to that. When I judge that she's making mistakes. You know, I want her to be happy and successful in the future, and I judge that she isn't studying enough. And so now I see a problem with that, right? that's going to create the negative energy. I want her to be happy and successful, but I'm judging that she's doing something wrong. Maybe I start becoming, you know, one of these more, yeah, I judge what her happiness and success looks like. Thank you, Teddy. Yeah. Yeah, just wanting people to be happy and successful, that seems like just a genuine thing, you know. That's very genuine. You want people to be happy and successful. That's what, remember, God's will for me is perfect happiness. Therefore, that is my will for everyone, right? I want everyone to be happy. But yeah, when I start judging what that looks like, or I start judging what she should do to get there, then I start creating that negative energy. Now, you know, another type of wanting is if I feel like there's some kind of lack in my life, like I cannot be happy unless I get a new car or a truck or a bigger house or a smaller house, or, you know, something is wrong and I need a desire, I desire something else in order to fix it. That creates that negative energy. And in fact, if we get very, very subtle in paying attention to ourselves, we can see what, we can feel what creates that negative energy, because you feel the negativity in yourself. Again, sometimes it may be to a lighter degree. You know, sometimes it's a slight negative feeling, and sometimes it may be to a heavier degree. But I'm sure we've all wanted something that we thought we had to get in order to be happy, you know. I remember reading a book when I was very, very young about a mistake that women made. It was talking about mistakes that women made which led to their husbands losing interest in them. And there were a lot of mistakes that women make. And this book was actually somewhat sexist, so nobody would even read it today. Everybody would judge it as wrong. But I only remember one thing from the whole book. And what I remember was it talked about how women would put off being happy until they lost 10 pounds. They would say, when I lose 10 pounds, then I will be happy. Then I will go out to dinner with you. Then I will put on makeup and we can go to a party. But I have to lose this 10 pounds first. You know, that's an example of that negative energy, right? There's nothing wrong with, you know, wanting to lose 10 pounds if at the same time you can say, and maybe I will and maybe I won't, and I choose to be happy right now. You see, that doesn't have negative energy to it, right? It'd be great to lose 10 pounds, but you know what? We'll see what happens, but yeah, sure, I'd love to go out tonight, you know? I mean, you know, so it's this feeling inside, that we're really paying attention for. That feeling inside is the root of all evil. That's what it's talking about. This I who needs something, this I who judges something, right? This is what we want to look for. So again, I is the root of all evil. That includes my opinions, my thoughts on how things should be, what is right and what is wrong, my ideas about what I want, my ideas, I love this one, about how right I am and how much I know. This is something we all feel at some point. We all feel we know more than someone else, right? If you pay close attention to that, sometimes maybe even all the time, there's this self-satisfaction feeling, this self-satisfaction feeling that some people mistake for happiness. But if you look at that self-satisfaction feeling very closely, you're going to notice that it is a judgmental, negative feeling in reality. If I think I am right and you are wrong, I am smarter than you, if I look at that at all, I'm going to notice that negative feeling that is actually barely hidden underneath that veil of self-satisfaction. All branches pushing forth from the root of I are the cause of suffering. You could say, anytime I'm thinking about myself. In fact, that's exactly how Michael Singer defines suffering, as thinking about yourself. And maybe we could just try paying attention to that. I have to wrap it up because it's the top of the hour. But maybe we could just try paying attention to that. Whenever you catch yourself thinking about me, 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 notice, is this a pure joy? A pure joy? Or is this a feeling, even a slight feeling of suffering? And if so, isn't that adding to the appearances, the evil appearances in the world? And then see if you can't find some willingness to drop whatever that thought process was you were on when you were thinking about yourself. Can I just drop this now? Because I really don't want to be a part of adding to these appearances of suffering in the world. I'm going to read this over one more time quickly, and then I have to go. I is the root of all evil. That includes my opinions, my thoughts on how things should be, what is right and what is wrong, my ideas about what I want, my ideas about how right I am and how much I know. All branches pushing forth from the root of I are the cause of suffering. Take down the I. Be nothing. I'd love to talk about that more. Maybe I'll start here next week. Be nothing. Here is peace. But for now, I gotta go. I'll see you all later.